Writer Whitney Terrell is back with a new novel, this one set not in Kansas City, but in Iraq, and dealing not with race, as his other books did, but with war, comradeship, and the folly of combat. The book is The Good Lieutenant, and Whitney Terrell will speak about it tomorrow night at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. More on that in just a few minutes. Whitney Terrell is the Assistant Professor of English and Creative Writing at UMKC. He's also the Faculty Advisor for U News. And Whit, nice to have you here. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
You went to Iraq twice, in 2006 and 2010, to embed with reporters and soldiers. What drew you to that? Because it was a war that so many people were dismissing as so completely unnecessary.
Well, I mean, I was writing The King of Kings County when we invaded Iraq. So I'm writing a book set in Kansas City in the 50s and 60s. And I had very strong opinions about whether or not the war was a good idea. And I felt totally left out. I mean, just me sitting on the couch arguing with my dad about stuff on the CNN. So I realized that when I was done with that book, if I was going to comment on that conflict like that, I would have to probably go do the reporting.
How did that process work? How do you just go from your couch at home to being an embedded reporter in Iraq?
Well, you can talk about it and make it sound reasonable, but the fact is that it's totally insane. And there's no reasonable explanation for how that would happen. You have to get a journalistic organization to sponsor you, but basically all you needed at that time was a letter. I actually ended up embedding with like a trade journal for engineers because I had a friend who was the editor, and he wrote me the letter. So I could go and then report on whatever I wanted. And then I came back and ended up selling a story to the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. That was a really interesting underground way to go as an engineering reporter, because nobody, the press were there. Well, there were people who were not happy with what they thought of as the liberal media at that time. Although this attitude was only expressed when you were far from the combat, areas. Mm-hmm. And so not being from the New York Times or the Washington Post made some things easier.
Well, what did you learn going over there? Was that your first time embedding with troops?
Yeah.
In 2006?
Yeah.
What surprised you about, the desert and Iraq and troops and all that?
Well, one of the things that was blew my mind about the area where we were, and this isn't true about all of Iraq, but we were the unit that I was with, 1st Division, 22nd Infantry, that battalion, their area of operations was west of Baghdad. It's a pretty verdant region. People grow crops. There's a lot of irrigation canals. It looked a lot like Western Kansas, to me, except with date palms and eucalyptus trees instead of cottonwoods. So that was extraordinary. I was also totally blown away, and I don't think that I even got this across as well as I would have liked in the book, at how massive our presence was there. Camp Liberty.
As the size of the city of Independence, I think.
Yeah, is really, really big. The Camp Liberty, Camp Victory sort of complex that we were running at the time. I think Camp Liberty had 40,000 people on at the time. Victory, I don't have a fact and a number in my head for that, but it was huge. It could take you like a half an hour to drive across the thing. There were bus services. There were, traffic jams, huge, huge cafeterias, gyms, basketball courts. It was just amazing. And that was just one of the many major, installations that we were running in Iraq at that time.
What did you make of that? What did that presence tell you? What did it say?
At the time, that's an interesting question because my evaluation of that has changed. When I first was there, it felt, like an importation of sort of American suburban style to Iraq, which suggested that we may not really have a clear sense of it seemed like we were too separated from the countryside, right, in 2006. Mm-hmm. And we probably were then. The summer of 2006 was when the civil war between the Sunnis and the Shia was starting. And There had been a bombing at a mosque in Samarra that was very important and had sort of lit the fuse to that in February. And people were killing each other in the countryside. And we and many of the soldiers that I was with were witnessing this, did not know why it was happening. So there was a lot of uncertainty and fear. And I felt like the, you know, the fact that large numbers of soldiers would go back into these very protected bases meant our intel wasn't all that great, you know? Mm-hmm. It felt like a bad separation. However, you know, when I went back in 2010, a lot of that had changed. The bases were still there, but the amount of time that U.S. troops were spending on the ground, out in the countryside, had increased. Security was massively improved. It had massively improved in those 4 years. And I had a totally different take on what we had achieved and done in Iraq mm-hmm. in those 4 years.
You were impressed.
I was really impressed. And, you know, there were, even though I began as somebody who was opposed to the war, and, you know, the war is not real popular among Democrats or Republicans today.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that by 2010, when I went embedding with engineers at that time, those are people who'd done four tours of duty in a lot of cases, or at least three. And the amount of work that the people in the Army did to all kinds of incredibly selfless things, repair infrastructure, you know, fix schools, all that stuff that you hear about and you think, ah, yeah, but it's not really working. Well, it was working by then. And the Iraqis, and this is a sad thing to say, especially as close to Memorial Day as we are, but the Iraqis didn't believe, in my view, that we were going to stay there and die to do what we had originally come to do in 2003. But by 2010, we had done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that had changed a lot of minds in that country.
What about the mindsets of the soldiers and the troops themselves in terms of their cynicism about the war, the purpose of the war? What did you walk away with there?
Well, I mean, the thing that was also fascinating and interesting for me, spending a lot of time around people in the Army, and that's been all during the time that I wrote this book, not just when I was embedded, you know, the Army is like America. You know, mm-hmm. it's as diverse as America is in many ways. And you have every kind of view. You know, you have everybody from people who are absolutely sure that bin Laden is hiding somewhere in Iraq and that we were going to find him, to people who were opposed to the war completely and had very, what would sound like very left-wing opinions about it. And so to me, that was nice. You know, as a novelist, you want to have a diversity of opinions. You want to have mm-hmm. be able to have people argue. And, you know, realizing that any opinion that you could find in the general public in America, you could find in the Army. That was cool.
So you wanted to write a novel about Iraq. Why, Whit? Because your previous two books were centered on this area. You focused on race. Why Iraq?
Well, like I said, that seemed to me like this. I'm a person who writes novels that are socially engaged, for lack of a better term. I just do. That's what I do. That's what interests me. And writers that do that were the people that I read a lot growing up.
Socially engaged meaning?
Meaning they're about an issue that people are arguing over that involves society and politics a lot of times, you know? And I think that, you know, writers that I have studied with and cared about, like James Allen McPherson or Russell Banks or Joyce Carol Oates, all do that. And I'm out of that mold.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember in 2003 and 2004, but the biggest social issue that was happening in the country right then was our invasion of Iraq. And I had a feeling that it was going to last for a long time. And also, I was somebody who grew up at the end of the Vietnam era, right? I was born in 67. So I had watched the Vietnam War play out,
Over many years.
And so I just, you know, I thought this is the same thing is going to happen here. And I wanted to be able to be a part of the conversation. I think every writer wants to be a part of the conversation.
Novelist Whitney Terrell is my guest. His new book, The Good Lieutenant. You know, in the book, you write about this idea of good people, good soldiers who wind up doing bad things. That was an issue in Vietnam. It was an issue in Iraq. That's a part of warfare we don't want to acknowledge. And I'm wondering what drew you to that large idea.
Well, that was just the idea that I had originally for the book. And I felt like Iraq, because of its complications, we were trying to do two different things there, right? One is we're trying to show a population that we are their friend, you know, and we're going to help you rebuild your country now that we have killed your leader.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, obviously, there were people in that within that population who were at war with us, and we were having to fight them as viciously as you would need to fight somebody who's totally opposed to you and trying to kill you. And so that complication made trying to get things done schizophrenic for a lot of people on the ground, I thought. And I felt like that deeply complicated the mission there.
Mm-hmm.
For soldiers, you know.
So the book grapples with the idea how?
Well,
good people doing bad things.
I mean, I invented a character named Emma Fowler, who I...
Who's your protagonist, who's the chief character in
the
book.
She's the lead. And I wanted her to be a kind of person that had a moral sense that any reader could identify with and like.
She's from Kansas.
She's not perfect, which is not that is not supposed to be connected to Kansas. She's an imperfect person, but she's a young kid who grows up in Junction City, very near the base. She doesn't have a military, you know, real military history in her family, but she decides to join the Army as a way actually of escaping some family problems that she has. And so her original way of being thought of by her soldiers is that she's super rule-oriented, wants to do everything by the book, very formal, you know, and they call her Family Values Fowler. And you know, I want to provide a psychological reason for why she does that, and part of that is her family. You know, she doesn't want to have – she wants to have an orderly relationship with her soldiers, not I'm not going to be your parent. I'm not your – this is not a family situation. I am your lieutenant. You're
right.
Going to do what I say. She feels like that's going to simplify life. And, of course, you know, that's not the way life works. And part of her arc through the book is learning how to actually be a good lieutenant. And that's where she is, you know, by halfway through the book. But unfortunately, the tricks – not tricks, but the techniques and personality traits that make her into a good lieutenant also lead her down a very dark path when she loses a soldier.
You begin this story in The Good Lieutenant with an IED attack. Remind us what an IED is and how common they were over there, because you spent time with crews who dealt with these things on an hourly basis.
Yeah, well, that's an improvised explosive device, or that's our acronym for what those things were. And really, they were a lot of times they were they could be artillery shells.
Roadside bombs.
Yeah, buried along the roadside.
Yeah.
The worst kind were... EFPs, explosively formed projectiles, which were they were more complicated to make. They were like milled drums of copper that had explosive inside of them, so they would form this molten copper sort of giant bullet that would go through armor. But most of them weren't quite that bad. But that, you know, the numbers of people being number of soldiers and Iraqis being injured and killed by those in 2006 was extremely high. And in fact, the Army had put together these special iron claw units, was what they called them then, which their job was to go out and basically look for these things.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to describe the opening? How far do you want to go in terms of describing the opening attack, the explosion?
Well, I mean, the opening attack is just, you know, it's what we should say up front is that this book is told in reverse chronology. So
mm-hmm. I was going to ask.
The very first scene is really the ending. And then the book moves backward from this, you know, a lot of bad things happen in that first scene. You know, Emma's platoon is hit by an IED in an open field. Several characters die. One very important character is gravely injured.
Yes.
Lieutenant Pulowski, who's
very important to Emma.
We learn about their relationship as the book goes backward. And And you don't really know exactly for sure why they're there. I mean, it's said that they're looking for the body of a soldier who might be buried in this field, but you don't know who that soldier is or why he was buried there or how what they've done to find this place. And then as the book unravels backward, it's like a mystery story in reverse. You find out how they came to be here, the decisions that Emma had to make, and the compromises she had to make with her normal sort of her morality to find this place.
Is it hard to write it that way?
Well, I wrote it forward. So that makes it easier.
At least the first time.
You know?
Yeah. Did you really write it the traditional way first?
No, I did. I did write the whole thing forward. And, you know, I was not satisfied with the ending because I felt that it was too grim. And I felt that novels should open outward, should have this sense of opening. But mine did not, mm-hmm. You know? And so... the real sort of, for me, stroke that liberated the book was the decision that the realization that it could be told backward. And the other thing that did was make the ending scenes of the novel, which are set at Fort Riley, and some in Kansas City. They go to the ice skating rink in town.
Right.
They made those much more interesting. Writing training scenes, like, you know, what they're doing before they deploy at the beginning of a book, it just felt really boring. And also it felt very similar to many other books that I had read. And so by reversing it, that time that the characters spend with each other and their personal relationships developed outside of combat are the ones that are valued.
So you ended up rewriting the entire book.
Oh, yeah. But that happens.
You novelists do that stuff
all the time.
Self-inflicted wounds here and self-torture and everything else.
Yes. Well, you know, there are other things that I did to change the book when I made it backward. And I got rid of some dumb ideas that I had held on to for a long time, you know. And that happens all the time. You know, the other thing is that I think structure is the hardest thing to get right in a book. I mean, if you're telling a strict chronological story, that's fine. But... you know, moving around in time is a tool that's really useful to a novelist and can be used really well. I recently wrote an essay about this, so I was thinking about Toni Morrison's Beloved or Joseph Heller's Catch-22 is very complicated chronologically. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Chronicle of a Death Foretold. There's a lot of interesting chronologies. And so for me, you really never can write the book properly until you have the structure, and this book just took me a long time to find the structure.
Oh, man. Whitney Terrell will speak at 7 tomorrow night. That's Thursday evening at Unity Temple on the Plaza. For more information, call Renaday Books in Fairway, 913-384-3126. Your focus is on Emma Fowler, a woman.
Yeah.
Why? It's a little unusual.
It is
not
unusual.
Real unusual, well, but a little unusual.
I'm excited that it's unusual. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been some very good books published about not fiction, or mostly short stories, but also novels, like Mac Gallagher's Youngblood, published about Iraq. But they do all focus on male soldiers. And women played a really, really important role, and the largest role that they had ever played in any sustained combat.
But 15% of the armed forces now comprised of women?
Something like that, yeah. It's unprecedented. And the other thing that I discovered is during my embed is that women were even though the law saying that women could have combat roles in the Army, wasn't, or the ruling or whatever it was that passed by, didn't happen until just recently.
Mm-hmm.
Women who were in support roles in Iraq were, in essence, in combat all the time. So anytime you were on a road, because of the IDs that we were talking about, anytime you're doing transportation, anytime you're doing logistics work, you were in danger just as much as any sort of patrol, any infantry patrol would be. So I had these encounters with female soldiers who had done these incredibly brave, very dangerous things, including one, a woman named Jennifer McDonough, who told me this long story in 2006 about trying to rescue what's called a buffalo. This is a big vehicle that has a lot of armor on it that's used to look for IEDs from a muddy field. That it took her 5 days to get this vehicle out. She got four or five other vehicles stuck along the way because it was so muddy around there. Her troops got hit by a 500-pound bomb that was buried in the area. They took fire. She made this incredibly long, extremely difficult. She brought in a portable bridge to get him across this canal. It's just this extraordinary sort of 5-day sustained mission to rescue this one vehicle. And after I heard that story, you know, I realized, well, that's what my character is going to do. And so,
to what extent do the male soldiers, what was your sense, do they respect and fall in line behind a female leader?
Well, I think it really varies depending on the guy you're talking to. And you know, I've interviewed and spoken with a lot of women who are veterans of Iraq. And in fact, there's a, if you go to my website or look around on the web, I've got a video of them talking about this.
Angela Fiddle and Major Stacy Moore.
Yeah, and Angela's a UMKC grad, by the way.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
You know, look, and there have been a number of nonfiction writers to write about the experience of women in combat. Benedict Carey in the New York Times, and people like Helen Benedict and Kirsten Holmstead and Helen Thorpe have all written books about this in a nonfiction sense. It can be very hard. The guys can be totally exclusionary, you know. I mean, you can get picked on. People will say extremely, unbelievably rude things to you. And rude is not the right word. I can't use the words on the
let
radio.
Let me just jump in, because Sergeant Fiddle tells you in a video that's posted on your website that there are three kinds of women who serve in the military. And this is her talking, not your host. This is, or Witt. This is Sergeant Fiddle. And she says there are difficult women, there are loose women, and there are lesbians. And I'm wondering—
Okay, but now you're changing all the words.
I am changing the words, because this is public radio
that's
here.
That's right.
But I'm wondering where your character, Emma Fowler, falls on that continuum. If in fact that's the case.
Well, she's neither one of those three things.
I was going to say,
the reason
that was
Angela
my sense.
Says that is that those are just cliched things that people say
that's
to
right.
you at times
that's
if
right.
you're a woman. You know, and so, you know, she has to win in a way that a male lieutenant would never have to, the trust and support and belief of her soldiers who are all male in her platoon. And that's a part of the arc of the story, too. And you know, one of the reasons that I was drawn to that, aside from the historical sort of novelty, right? And novelty is not right. I think it's really amazing that all these women have fought in Iraq, and they were extraordinary people. But because they were outsiders, they had to do so much more in order to be successful. To me, they were extremely compelling figures, and it made Emma an extremely interesting person to write about.
The author is Whitney Terrell. The book is The Good Lieutenant, a boxed and starred review from Publishers Weekly. Whit speaks at 7 tomorrow evening. That's Thursday evening at Unity Temple on the Plaza. For more information, call Rainy Day Books in Fairway, 913-384-3126. Always good to have you here, Whitney.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Good luck with the book.
See you.